With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
This is the Sixth Man Show, an Orlando Magic podcast, with your hosts, Luke Sylvia and Jonathan Osborne, covering all things Magic basketball, by fans, for fans. Go Magic! What's going on, Orlando Magic fans? You guys are back with the Sixth Man Show. Today is September 5th, 2022. Jonathan Osborne here. As always, I am joined by my co-host, Luke Sylvia. Luke, what is up, bro?
Well, as you guys are listening to this, I'm probably just chilling out. This is a long weekend, so just being able to hang out, not have to work today. So I'm probably just enjoying myself right now in real time. But currently, I'm great. You know, we just kind of hanging out, had a good week. What about you? Anything fun that you're planning on doing this long weekend?
Yeah. So if obviously you guys might be a little bit confused right now, understandably so. We're recording this Friday night. Producer Kevin has some fantastic plans this weekend, this Labor Day weekend. So because of that, we're recording a few days early. But you guys are listening to this on Labor Day. Thank you for reminding me, Luke. Happy Labor Day. I hope you are resting from your labors on this Labor Day. No, you know what I'm hoping? I'm hoping I get to play a lot of World of Warcraft this weekend. I've been back into WoW recently. And yeah, it's like going home again. You know, I've been playing World of Warcraft off and on for a long time. And I'm back right now. Feels good.
You know how I knew you were already back into WoW?
Oh, I don't know.
I knew because our Six Man Show YouTube, I logged into
World
that.
World of Warcraft videos. Yes, sir.
And all the recommendeds are World of Warcraft videos. So I was like, oh, this man is
fiending. I did see that because
it.
You were looking up some kind of like Tim Tebow speech. I saw the same like history. We can see like the watch history.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah.
No, it was the Tim Tebow highlights. Yeah. No, it's like you feel like you're violating somebody because you can just see everything they've been looking up. But mine's all Gator stuff and college football stuff right now. So it's nothing.
Well, whenever like usually when I'm going to look up like overly nerdy stuff, I'll like log into my personal so that you guys don't have to like see me looking up like, you know, Pokemon card packs being opened.
No, that's also was on the recommended.
Exactly.
I didn't know you were big into Pokemon openings.
Well, I mean, so obviously like everyone is open like into like Pokemon cards like growing up and all the like the video games and stuff like that, but just a couple of my buddies have been just bored recently and have like gotten into it, so it's like I might as well kind of like check it out. So I've been dabbling a little bit. The off season is where I do all of my like just weird
nerdy things,
random stuff, and then as soon as basketball season starts, it's just like I'm laser focused into that.
Yeah,
there's like I don't have time for video games, I don't have time for anime, Pokemon cards, that, and I'm a big collector. Like I've just always enjoyed like collecting. Like for our folks on YouTube that can see this, listening, you guys can't see this, but this right here is just a stack of signed Orlando Magic cards. We did our podcast with Court Cousins a few weeks back, and I went through all of these with them. But just to, you know, just a little extra, a little something for our viewers, just got to look at all these. These are just all signed Orlando Magic cards. And these aren't everything that I have either.
It's a lot.
So it's a lot. I've always been into collecting.
Man's got a big deck.
Hey, you need to watch your mouth. All right. This is a family friendly show. You're like you're pushing the envelope right now. No, hey. I'm kidding. Nope. No more innuendos. Nope. We're good. That's right. Our one per show right there. Uh-huh. But no, like everyone knows we all had Pokemon cards as a kid, and it's like, why did I throw those freaking things out? Because I don't know if you know this, but like a first edition Charizard is worth like thousands of dollars now. Like even if it's not graded in like a PSA 10 or a BGS 10 or whatever, if that's the case, you have like hundreds of thousands of dollars on your hands. But like the old cards that we all had as kids are worth like thousands of dollars now. And we just like threw them out or gave them away at like a thrift shop or a garage sale, something like that.
Yeah. I was mainly, I promise we're going to get into the show, but I was mainly into like the video game, like the games of Pokemon. And then Pokemon Go, when that came around, I was just like, this is great. But yeah, I
still love Pokemon Go.
Even, it's a solid game. It's fun. Though I didn't do the cards, like I wasn't on the card scene for Pokemon. But
You're a little young for that.
Okay. Anywho, when I see like the back of a Pokemon card, like just like the, obviously like the Pokemon, like the Pokeball with like the, you know what I mean? Everybody knows what a Pokemon card looks like on the back. Whenever I see that, I just get like waves of nostalgia that wash over me, even though I never collected cards or even like really even had any. So that's how you know that a company has done it the right way, because it's just like a pure nostalgic feeling, even though I had no ties to the cards. So that was my
right there. Is that what you're referring to right there?
It is beautiful. It is beautiful. Right. So yeah, that's my Pokemon and input there.
Yeah, I was big into Pokemon. And I was big into Yu-Gi-Oh as well. Like that was like my jam. Like my generation. I was,
or what those cards look like as well. Like that. It's like the golden brown like looking back of the card, right?
Maybe it is.
Oh, maybe it is right there. Yeah, look at
a little
that.
Yu-Gi-Oh action. Mm-hmm. But dude, all those old cards. Like I had the Dark Magician, Blue Eyes White Dragon, Red Eyes Black Dragon. All that stuff is worth thousands of dollars now. Really enough to make you sick if you just dwell on that for too long. but yeah. Anyways, my name is Jonathan Osborne, and I am a total freaking nerd. If you didn't know that by now, now you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
This week we actually are going to talk Orlando Magic basketball, believe it or not. We talked about this on the podcast last week, and we put the feelers out there on social media a few weeks back. But we're doing a preseason night, like just kind of a group outing with our listeners to go and watch the game. So the last preseason game, the preseason finale, October 14th at 7 o'clock versus the Cavs. We have basically like a group discount setup that we set up through the Magic with our guy, John McCall. If you are not familiar with John McCall, he's really like our go-to in terms of all things Orlando Magic tickets. If we ever, you know, have any questions or somebody needs help with tickets, we always refer them to John McCall. So if you are looking for tickets, or you know, group outings, season tickets, anything like that, would definitely suggest hitting up our guy, John McCall. I'm going through my phone right now so I can pull up his number. His number is 407-916-2752. If you're looking for tickets, hit up John McCall. He's a massive help. But if you want to join us for our group outing, you can purchase your tickets through FEVO. It's FEVO.me/the Sixth Man Show. Again, that's FEVO.me/the Sixth Man Show. We're trying to fill the lower bowl, like towards the Magic bench, but tickets are going very quickly. They didn't restrict all the tickets for us because this is the first time that we've done something like this. So people are still buying those tickets on their own. So these tickets are going to go fast. So if you want to join us for that game, again, FEVO.me/the Sixth Man Show. Tickets are anywhere from $28 a piece to $38 a piece. So they are going to go fast. So make sure that you guys go ahead and check that out. Franz Wagner, as you all know, is participating in FIBA Eurobasket 22, playing for the German national team. And the other day, so today is Friday, so that was Thursday. Thursday, France played Germany. And Germany was not favored in this game. We talked about on the last pod that every time I say Franz and France, I keep getting those so screwed up today. Mm. France is one of the favorites to win the entire tournament. Yeah. So we were hoping that Germany would be able to keep it competitive, but Germany actually came out on top. They won the game 76-63, especially in the third and fourth quarter, really were able to extend the lead and win this game pretty comfortably. Luke, you and I wanted to talk about this with you. We've been talking about whether or not Germany is really going to feature Franz offensively. And we thought that maybe once they get into Eurobasket, into the actual tournament, that things would change a little bit. But Especially Germany's bench was so lethal in this game. They didn't really need a ton of offense out of Franz. So Franz ended the game with 8 points on 4 of 7 shooting, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and 1 steal. For most of the game, he was matched up onto someone that we're familiar with, Evan Fournier. And Evan Fournier was held to just 7 points on 2 of 10 shooting from the floor. Evan Fournier struggling offensively. Rudy Gobert being in foul trouble for the majority of this game. Both were major factors for France really not being able to ever get things going. But a big win for Germany to start the tournament here, the 76-63 win over France. But what did you think of France not really being featured that much offensively?
Yeah, I think I would be irritated about it. And I obviously think he was underutilized offensively, but he did so well defensively that I'm really not too mad about it. And people will that are just haters of Evan Fournier in general will just hear that and be like, you know, who cares that he held them to that stat line. But as we said in the last episode, when I was going over the MVP odds of Eurobasket, what that looked like, Fournier was like 4th or 5th best odds in the whole tournament to win the MVP of the tournament. So that tells you something, that, you know, Franz was able to clamp him up quite literally in that game. And was
put
just
him
nice.
On skates.
And put him on skates. Franz may not have had the, you know, most production, but number one, he was efficient. And number two, he gave us like 2 highlights, which is pretty good considering he had single digit points. So I, you know, it is what it is. I think he's just playing his role. I do think that we, like we talked about earlier as well, if Franz isn't featured, it is a lot to do with the fact that it is a seniority type prove it thing when you were playing international basketball. That's why, honestly, if Mo Wagner was playing, he probably would be featured more than Franz Wagner. I really think it's just like a respect thing for what you've done for literally your country. And so I think Franz is just like obviously getting started in his Germany, like Eurobasket, FIBA type of groove. And we'll see him kind of just like with the Magic be featured even more and more as the time goes on. So I think he'll be featured with the Magic sooner than he will with Germany. But that being said, hopefully next time this comes around, they don't have a choice but to feature him because of what he's been doing in the NBA.
Well, I like your point that it's like a, you know, respect thing, like the seniority on the team. At some point, you got to throw the respect out the window if you're trying to win games in this tournament. And their best chance is either going to be Dennis Schröder or giving the ball to Franz Wagner. Like, Dennis Schröder had a really nice highlight. It was absolutely a carry. Like, that little spin move that he had where he just kind of froze the France defense and then had an open layup at the rim. It was sick, but very much a carry. And then you alluded to the turnaround jumper that Franz had right in Rudy Gobert's face.
Yeah.
And when I saw that, I tweeted out, like, nah, like, Gobert's got to sign the ball after this. I wasn't sure that people were going to get that reference. I don't know if that was something that was just exclusive to, like, the area that I grew up. Did you get that reference or no?
I had never really heard it, but it could be something that's widely known. Maybe I just don't know it. But also, I understood. You know what I mean?
Okay. Like, that makes me feel better.
I got it. Like,
Use your context clues.
Yeah. No, great context clues. Big context clues guy. So I was able to just really snuff that out. But no, it made sense to me.
So like growing up, whenever you'd be playing pickup, like if you hit a shot like literally right in somebody's face, you'd like throw it to them and they'd have to sign it. Like, they'd have to fake their signature on it and like check it back to you. It might have just been a dumb thing that me and the kids at the rec center did and like various parks that I would play at as a kid. But I hope that was a thing everywhere else, or we were just idiots doing that for like no reason.
That sounds tough to me. I like that. I don't hate that at all.
Yeah, it was like a, you know, show me some respect. I just, you know, jade this right in your face. So, but yeah. So when you guys are listening to this again, we're recording this on Friday. So they will play Bosnia and Herzegovina on Saturday, and they have a back to back actually where they will play Lithuania on Sunday. So Franz. Again, I keep screwing this up. Franz will have played 2 more games in between now and the time that you guys are listening to this podcast. Please forgive me. The dyslexia right now is really hardcore. Last bit of Magic news, and then we're going to talk about our guards. This is going to be like our final position group breakdown. Gary Harris this week had arthroscopic surgery to perform a meniscectomy in his left knee for the torn meniscus. Dr. Brian Suter, if you guys are unfamiliar with him, he does great sports injury breakdowns on Twitter and especially on YouTube. He tweeted out that the meniscectomy means the torn piece was trimmed slash smoothed out, and that typical recovery can be 4 to 6 weeks. So I know we talked about, like, there's different kind of meniscus tears, and sometimes it can just kind of heal on its own, or sometimes you need to go in and, you know, like, perform surgery. My understanding is that, like, the meniscus, like, there's only so much meniscus, and if they have to keep going in and, like, trimming that out, that, like, long term, that can be, like, detrimental. So a lot of times, especially in younger players, they don't recommend like going in and, like, trimming that out. But this must be, like, a case where it was a good idea. It's going to get him back relatively quickly. So hopefully we'll get Gary Harris back sooner rather than later, and potentially even for the start of the season.
Yeah, that would be nice. We've talked about how much we're going to utilize his shooting. I think still people don't understand how important he's going to be to this team this year in terms of veteran leadership and also on the court performance. I don't think he's just there, like, as a guy to be a veteran. Like, he is actually going to contribute and has genuinely, as we've also talked about, like, and we'll continue to talk about, genuinely has an argument to start on this team. So yeah, I think he's pivotal. I think that we really dodged a bullet with the fact that we might miss a week of the first season of the beginning of the season, well, maybe two. So at least that's what we hope. We never know with this front office, but that's the realistic way that this usually goes, is he should be back in those first couple weeks.
When it comes to realistic expectations with the Magic and injuries, I have no expectations. I'll be happy when Gary is back. That's all. Yep. I will say. We hope that Gary gets well very soon. Would love to see him back with the Magic, you know, early on in the season. Now, before we move on to our conversation around the Orlando Magic guards, we are going to go through our Patreon and shout out our Hall of Fame tier patrons. If you guys have not heard, or you just started listening to the show, if you want to help financially support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/thesixmanshow. We have three tiers of benefits that you can choose from. Every little dollar that comes in through the Patreon goes back into the show to help do with, like, giveaways and upgrading equipment and just bringing more content and better content to you all. So every dollar helps. We really appreciate everyone's support. And as part of our Patreon, we shout out our Hall of Fame tier patrons on every single episode. That is what I'm going to do now. Shout out Court Cousins, Armin, Carson Tulo, Jonathan Borges, Norm L., Magic Player History, Bailey, Wiffle, Michael Salapong, Franz Goated Fichot, Ryan Singh, The Distract, Eric Randall. Eric Randall just upgraded from our All-Star tier to our Hall of Fame tier, so a big shout-out to Eric. Really appreciate
shout
that.
Eric.
Shout-out, Eric. Woo-woo. Pierre A., Dylan Holden, Mr. Mikey, Lil Penny, Drum, Danimal, Dutto15, Bobby Skinner, Nate Donley, Goaty93, and Teddy Sylvia, Mrs. Sylvia, Luke's mom. Shout-out, Mrs. Sylvia. We appreciate you guys so much. Thank you all for your support. Every little bit goes a long way. We love you guys.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself?
Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Luke, let's break down the Orlando Magic guards, and I am going to throw it to you.
Yeah. So where we will start here is we'll start with, it's no secret what our projected starting lineup is for the start of the season. We went through that with the forwards, obviously put all that out there. If you want, you guys can go back and listen to our forwards episode, which was our most recent one before this. But with that being said, we first can talk about Markel Nagai Fultz.
Oh, you love the nickname. I mean, the middle name.
I love the middle name. It's a sick middle name that I've never heard before, so I always use it. Anyway.
What's your middle name? Do you have a middle name?
Benjamin.
Benjamin. Yeah. Have you ever met someone that doesn't have a middle name?
Yeah. Yeah, my cousin.
Yeah. I grew up, one of my best friends didn't have a middle name. I always find that weird.
Yeah.
Like your parents didn't love you enough to give you a middle name.
Do you want to talk about Markel Nagai Fultz?
Yeah, let's do that.
We want to talk about middle names. Okay. All right. Yeah.
It's a sick middle name.
It is. It is, actually. So let's talk about Markel, because last season we obviously got limited glimpses of him. 18 games, 3 games where he started. Near the end of the year, we got him really going over that 20-minute limit, but still ended the year averaging exactly 20 minutes per game with 10.8 points per game, 2.7 rebounds, 5.5 assists, 2.2 turnovers. He was shooting less than a 3 a game at 23.5% and almost 10 field goals a game at 47.4%. Is there anything, like, do you think this is even up for debate that Markel Fultz is starting opening night for the Magic?
I don't think it's a debate whatsoever. It just always blows my mind when you have conversations with people that, like, don't follow the Magic closely. And they're always surprised when you say that Markel Fultz is one, the best guard on the team, and that he'll be their starting point guard opening night next season. Without failure, they are always surprised. And it's just like, man, you didn't even attempt to watch the Magic last year.
It's always followed up by, really?
Yeah.
Every time.
Always. They're always surprised. It's so funny. But to me, it's not a conversation at all. He should be the starter opening night. And I think it's just important to let people know, like, why he's so important to the team. Like, he just improves the offense so much. The Magic don't really have another true point guard on the roster. And he just, like, sets the table up for everyone else. Like, if you are open, Markel Fultz is going to get you the basketball. There is not a place on the floor that he cannot place the basketball. If you are cutting and you're open, you are getting the ball and you're getting an open layup. That, and he just gets to the rim whenever he wants. It does not matter who is in front of him. He just has this unorthodox style of movement. People call it, like, herky jerky. And he just gets to the rim at will. And he is a above average mid-range shooter. So although the three-point shooting is obviously not what it was at Washington. Yeah, it's just like when he gets to his spots, they call them his kill spots, because he's getting to them and he's going to score and there's nothing that you can do about it. And he's obviously a big point guard, incredibly athletic, capable defender. Markel Fultz is just right now the best well-rounded guard on the team, and he should be our point guard opening night.
Yeah, and we've alluded to this already. We've talked about it before, but because we are talking about Markel, I want to just reiterate how important he is. Markel Fultz, when we had Stephen Kagan on of NBA University, I don't even know, that was like a little more than a month ago at this point. Offseason just runs together. I don't remember when we did things. But he pointed out Markel was number 2 in the NBA in high value assists behind Trae Young. And this is all factored in per 36, obviously, because Markel only played 20 minutes a game. But he had 10.1 high value assists per 75. So essentially, if you want to get past all of the...
Just kind of go into what the high value assist is.
So, and correct me if I'm wrong, because what I was about to say was, I am not an analytic guru. We have made that just very obvious. All I know in terms of that is that he is number two behind Trey, and he's with the elite. Like
all we know, elite. That boy nice.
That boy is nice. No, but correct me if I'm wrong. But essentially, it is past that, you know, lead to an open three or a, I believe it was like a layup, right? Like, what is the? Do you remember or what
free
Stevens,
throw attempts
or free throw yeah. attempts? So
it's a, it's so, a layup, an open three, or a free throw attempt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I was partially right there. But all that to say, Markel, number two at that, really just provides the insight to where, you know, Markel is just so valuable to this team. Obviously, I'm on board. Markel is going to be starting opening night. I would be very surprised if not. And now, Jonathan, we can kind of transition to the two spot. Who we think will be starting at the two spot. I'm going to say Jalen Suggs. Are you also in the Jalen Suggs camp in terms of who you think realistically starts?
I think it should be. The issue is, and a lot of people have brought this up, and that's why the injury to Gary Harris was just like such, like just kind of took the wind out of a lot of people's sails, is because starting a backcourt of Markelle Fultz and Jalen Suggs, who Jalen Suggs was a 21% 3-point shooter, you have like no shooting in that backcourt. And for a lot of people, for obvious reasons, in terms of spacing, that is a big concern. So defensively, and just like in terms of like potential, I really like the fit with Markel and Jalen Suggs, along with Franz and Paolo and Wendell. Like that is, to me, one of the best passing lineups in the entire league, like from night one, with Markel and Jalen and Paolo and Franz and Wendell. All of those guys are like above average playmakers for their position. And yeah. I just feel like it would be such fun basketball to see those guys on the floor together. And then obviously they're all very capable defenders. But again, the shooting is an issue. So people that are like, wait a minute, what about Cole Anthony? Like, I'm not dismissing Cole Anthony. Obviously what we saw out of Cole last year, like the first 20 some odd games, like October and November, was scoring close to 20 points a game on relatively good efficiency. If what we saw after that point was just Cole like being injured, which he was, you know, with the ankle injuries and stuff like that, and we just never really saw him like get back to that same level, and he's able to get anywhere near that, like, to me, I would argue, if you're giving me for sure October, November Cole Anthony or Jalen Suggs, who you don't know if he's improved as a shooter, I would just say start Cole Anthony. Just in terms of like offense, he's the better option right now next to Markel Fultz. Now, defensively, you got Markel, you've got those other guys. I think you could hide Cole to a certain extent in that lineup. But all that aside, I think it should be Jalen Suggs to start the year. And I am expecting Jalen to take like a significant leap in terms of his shooting ability. 21%, to me, there's just no way that he's going to be quite that bad again. Like, even if he's around 30, I will take that this year.
Yeah. There's a lot that goes into this conversation. I think that we have just said for so long that Jalen Suggs will be the starting shooting guard, probably like going into next season. I feel like we've said it enough that it's gotten to the point where like we've just accepted it. Not that it's wrong, but there's arguments to present in terms of Cole running that two spot. Like you said, if you get Cole from like those 2 months out of the year last year before injury, then that's a no-brainer. But what I will say is that Cole, you know, one of the reasons that you could have him coming off the bench is just what we talked about, which is him being like an offensive spark plug, coming off the bench, being the sixth man for this team, providing just that you know, kind of uplifting for this roster in general on the court. But also, Cole is still an underrated playmaker, in my opinion. He was forced to run the point guard position last year. At the beginning of the season, I was like, I don't know if I really trust Cole to run the offense. And then Cole Anthony, and I'll list Jalen's numbers here in a second, but Cole Anthony averaged 5.7 assists and 2.6 turnovers a game last year. Like, those aren't numbers that should, like, those aren't bad numbers at all, and definitely warrant somebody who could play the point guard position if needed. So I wouldn't be surprised if he comes off the bench solely for this fact that he's going to be running the point guard position, because you don't really trust the rest of the guys on the bench to run it. We know who's on that bench and we're going to talk about them, but like, it just might come down to that. Now, that being said, just as far as like listing Jalen Suggs' numbers last year, and you were talking about improving as a shooter, shot 4 threes a game, 21.5%, 36% from the field, 11.5 attempts a game, 11.8 points, 4.4 assists and 3 turnovers, and 3.6 rebounds a game, 77% from the free throw line. So that's Jalen. In terms of last year, like you said, his efficiencies need to improve. There is going to be, what I will say as well, Jonathan, is that there's going to be pros to either Cole starting or Jalen starting. If Jalen starts, you're going to have his, like, just to add to how insanely good that team will be, that lineup will be defensively. If Cole starts, you're able to capitalize on his playmaking. Essentially, you got two playmakers on the court, like high level playmakers on the court with Cole, just compared to Jalen, in my opinion. I think Jalen can get there, but Cole Anthony, just, it's all, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, for him to be having like over 5 assists a game and 2-something turnovers, like, he was good. But with him off the bench, you have someone to run that second unit, you know, if you are going to play them kind of in mass subs there. But I don't know. I don't really think you can go wrong, especially to start the year with either of those guys.
And I think that's also like part of the discussion, is that right now I do feel more comfortable with Cole like initiating the offense. So yes, if Jalen is the two, like next to Markel, and Paolo's going to have the ball a ton, Franz is going to have the ball a ton, you're still going to have, you know, like these, like, you know, high post ups with, you know, with Wendell, him getting the ball at, like, the, you know, the center of the paint or at the elbow. So it's not going to be all put on Jalen, where like if you're starting Cole and Jalen is the point guard off the bench, then like all of the playmaking and facilitating falls on him, which, like, we saw flashes of that. We saw, you know, potential there, but the turnovers were absolutely an issue last year. And I was doing some quick computer math here while you were going through that. So I mentioned like Jalen going from like 21%, even if he gets to 30%, if he would have shot 30% from the 3-point line last year, that takes his average from 11.8 up to 15.5. If you tell me that Jalen is averaging 15 points per game this year on like a tick up in efficiency, like, that to me is a win and like the kind of jump that we need to see out of Jalen offensively. Now, 21 to 30% is a big leap, but again, free throw percentage, he was fine. 77% from the floor. We saw the confidence. He has the shooting form. So with Jalen and Cole, like you said, there's not really like a wrong answer there. It's just, to me, I feel like Jalen raises the ceiling of this team defensively. And if he's starting and playing the majority of the minutes there, like, this team to me really should be like a top 10 team in terms of defensive rating. And then I just feel a lot more comfortable with Cole running the bench unit right now. I don't want to see Jalen, not that I don't want to see Jalen, but I could see Jalen running that second unit. And if the game hasn't totally slowed down for him, we could see some of those turnover issues again. And hopefully that would be alleviated, him playing next to other like super high level playmakers in the starting lineup.
Yeah. So next, I want to talk, Jonathan, about the man who is out for the first, hopefully a couple weeks of the season. And that
or not at all. Maybe he'll be ready for the start of the season. We hope.
That would be great. But I'm not holding
my breath. 7 weeks.
Yes. Something like that. I don't know. I'm bad at math.
Yeah, not gonna hold my breath, but yeah. You know,
no. But
it would be nice.
It is Gary Harris. And Gary, I'm pulling up his numbers here. He essentially played 61 games for the Magic, started in 30 of them this last year, had 11 points per game, 11 points per game, almost 2 assists, 2 rebounds, shot 38.5% from 3 on 5 attempts, and 43.4% from the field on 9 attempts. So Gary Harris, who, like I said, solely because of his shooting, he's a good defender and good enough to have him in a starting lineup, absolutely. Just from what we saw from him last season in terms of how he was able to turn it on there near really the last half, more than half of the season, after there's a little bit of very much of a rough start. So I think that he would have an argument to eventually be in this starting lineup. But as, you know, coming back from injury, things like that, regardless of how serious or not serious it was. I think that we'll see him coming off the bench regardless. I think that in that time, that if he does miss the first couple weeks, it gives the Magic really time to see where Jalen is at in terms of efficiencies, how he's feeling, if he's in a groove, and Cole as well. I mean, we're going to just be able to feel out where he is too. If we're getting that Cole of old and really the first beginning of the season last season, or if it's still much of the same where he's inconsistent and really just inefficient in general. So I think Gary, like if neither of those guys are panning out in terms of like Jalen's not taking that leap, Cole's not who he was at the beginning of last season, and that just is who he is for right now. Not to say they can't change, but Gary is the quick fix. Gary's the guy that you can just put in that lineup and you know he's going to do his role. He's going to do his thing. He's going to hit those corner threes. He's going to play good defense, and you're not going to have to worry about him making very bad decisions that are going to cost you a game. I just feel like you can trust Gary Harris when it comes down to it.
Yeah, I think quite obviously, I'm not saying anything that's very profound here, but the Gary Harris injury potentially really messes up the Magic's plans, especially early in the season, particularly if the idea was to start Gary, right? Because now coming off the meniscus, you're definitely going to bring him in off the bench when he first comes back. And then it's like, all right, well, what if Jalen is playing really well in the starting lineup, or if Cole is playing really well in the starting lineup and the team is looking good? Then you have to kind of reevaluate what Gary's role is going to be. But again, this is underneath the premise that they were going to start him, which we don't know. Now, there's a legitimate argument to why they would do that, but we just don't know what the team's plans are right now. But yeah, when Gary comes back, he's going to be a welcome addition just because of the fact that he is that kind of calming presence, whether it's in the starting lineup or whether it's coming in off the bench. This team is very young. We still need veterans in the lineup, not only obviously in the locker room to bring these young guys along, but they are a calming presence when they're in the game. So we don't really know what, obviously an injury like this messes up your expectations of what a guy is going to be and what his role is going to be, especially early in the season, but we can't get Gary back soon enough.
Would you, and I'm just thinking out loud, I haven't thought of this yet. Would you say that there is a legitimate chance that Jamal Mosley does not know who he's rolling out on opening night starting?
I think right now there's a chance. Like, I feel like he probably has a pretty good idea. Now, we can go back to a couple of months ago, like right after the draft, and Jeff Weltman, talking to the media, he was on the Ryan Russillo podcast. And he was talking about who their starters were, and we're like going through the ages of them.
You're right.
And it matched up basically with Markel, Jalen, Franz, Paolo, and Wendell. So it's fun to have these conversations, and we can be talking about this. Jeff Weltman definitely doesn't listen to the pod, but if he does, he's just sitting back like, you idiots. We already know exactly what we're going to do. So they could know right now, but if not, like training camp and preseason, like that's kind of what that is for to a certain extent.
I can't help but go back to last season when, and we talked about this recently as well, talking about, the centers and everything. But when Mo and Dell started next to each other, I think if it wasn't for preseason in general, like if preseason did not exist, I don't think we see that on opening night as a starting lineup. Just because that is what preseason is for. And especially with Jamal Mosley coming into like his first year as a head coach in general, first year really getting to know these guys on the Magic roster and what they can do, what their strengths and what their weaknesses are, what their chemistry levels are like. Preseason is pivotal. It is only his second year. I know that now he has a much better pulse on this team and what these guys are capable of and all of those things that he has learned over the last year. But all that to say, I wouldn't be surprised if come preseason, if his lineups that he's throwing out there, legitimately he's seeing what works. There is so much versatility with these lineups in general, and I'm sure we will do a whole episode on what those lineups will look like in depth and the strengths and weaknesses of those at some point.
Can I be honest with you?
What?
I don't want to do that. You want to know why? Because there are so many different possibilities with this
I know.
Team.
Like it's
different things that it's different lineups
it's a magical.
Throw out there.
It is magical what you
it's
can do with the lineups of this
is,
team.
Bro.
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, we're just having fun. He's got to make the decisions. But that's what I'm saying is that I wouldn't be shocked if Mosley has an idea of a starting lineup or what rotations run together. But this team is different than last year when you're talking about them being fully healthy. And preseason is going to be a lot of fun as a result, because we're going to just be able to break down lineups and rotations and things that he threw out there on the court and be like, was this real or no? Like, do we think that this is a legitimate lineup that'll happen in the middle of an actual NBA game? Or is this just Mosley having some fun with the lineups in general? So I think there's a lot to look forward to when it comes to that. I want to now get into RJ Hampton. He's the next one really on the list in terms of like a depth chart for me. Just to recap up to this point, we have talked about Markel, Jalen Suggs, Cole Anthony, and Gary Harris. So RJ Hampton is kind of next on my list. Him and like Terrence Ross really go one and two for me, honestly. But Gary out, I could see Terrence just really sliding in and replacing him if he is out those first couple weeks for sure. But we will see. But for right now, we'll talk about RJ Hampton, Jonathan. As far as RJ goes, last season, 21, almost basically 22 minutes a game. He averaged 7.5 points a game, 2.5 assists, and 3 rebounds on 35% from 3 attempts per game, and then 38% from the field on 7 field goals a game. So is there anything on RJ? Are you expecting him to thrive this year? Or like, where do you think RJ is at in terms of even what he's going to, you know, how he's going to view this season in general?
Well, I feel like we have this conversation every other pod almost about RJ.
Feels that way.
It's just about him accepting his role as a true 3-and-D like specialist. I feel like we have enough tape on RJ. He's obviously incredibly talented, very athletic, high flyer, very quick guy. But I think we've seen enough to realize that he's not going to be a point guard in the league, and then he's not going to be like even your secondary ball handler in most situations. To me, he just needs to come in and, again, just embrace the role of being a true 3-and-D guy. I believe he shot 40% on catch and shoot threes last year, which is right where you want guys to be. And what, you know, can be a pesky defender. Like, you know, we very much won that home game against Utah last year because of his defense on, you know, defense, good grief, his defense on Donovan Mitchell, like, you know, down the stretch of that game. So, yeah, with RJ, I just wanted to embrace his role. And I think if he does that, like, he has the potential to be like a really high level role player. Like, it seems like every single year, some team is trading for one of these guys, like a contender is trading for one of these guys, and you're like, oh, wow, that's the kind of guy that might like make or break that team's championship run. Like, that's a legitimate addition. And I do think that RJ has a true path to becoming like something similar to that, like a high level role player that is going to shoot 40% from three and is going to be able to guard like the other team's, you know, second or third best player at times. And if he can do that, I feel like he can have a real role on this team. I feel like he'll be like a regular in the rotation. But if he, or for some reason, I feel like the Magic should have seen enough at this point to say, okay, this is what you want you to, what we want you to do. But if they try to like keep pushing him into this like playmaking role, I think they're just setting him up. I don't want to say failure, but not exactly for success. So I think all parties involved should agree on what RJ's role needs to be moving forward.
Yeah. And honestly, there's not much else to add. We talk about RJ a lot just because we really don't know what to expect from him this upcoming season. We know what we hope to expect, which is everything that you just talked about. But the one thing I'm noting here really before we move on to T. Ross, because I, like I said, I feel like RJ, we've talked about him enough. Everybody understands where we're at with him. I'm looking at these guards, Jonathan, and there's, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Usually a rotation in the NBA is like you're playing 9 guys, typically sometimes 10. You can stretch it to 10. And we're talking about 8 guards that we believe there's a world where like at least most of them are getting minutes, like 7 of them. So at the end of the day, someone's going to be...
You think 7 guards are going to get minutes?
Well, no, there's an argument to be made for at least seven of these
I was
people
like,
to
bro,
get minutes.
I'm like, good grief, no. We're running 12 or 13 deep.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But that is just, that's crazy to me. And we'll kind of, we can circle back to that and touch on it briefly after we go through kind of the remaining list here. But I just want to point that out. That's something like I realized in real time. Just, we know, we say it all the time. We have so many guys that are vying for minutes on this team that there's just not enough to go around. We know that after training camp, before and after preseason, before the season starts, one guy is going to have to be off the team. Like, there just literally is not enough room. You're at 16, right? And you need 15 on opening night. So going to be interesting how that shakes out. Someone's getting traded or someone's getting waived. Like, it has to happen before opening night. So I assume that that comes from the guard group because there are so freaking many. But we'll see where it kind of shakes out. There's a lot of forwards and centers as well. But with that being said, we can talk here about Terrence Ross. The human torch last year was not so torchy. 10 points a game, 2.6 rebounds, 1.8 assists, one turnover, 29% from three on four attempts. That is so ridiculous. And then 39.7% from the field on 8.8 attempts. What do you think is in store for Mr. Terrence Ross this season?
So I think, and I think a lot of us would agree that Terrence seemed pretty checked out last season. You know, I think he came into the season probably expecting a bigger role than, you know, what he eventually was. And just the way that you hear him talk about the team currently, there's just kind of a pep in his step. You know, he seems rejuvenated. He seems more excited. Seems excited about the brand new, you know, Advent Health Training Center. So I think just kind of him having a different level of expectations of what is going to be asked of him this season, and just like his, what seems to be like renewed, you know, excitement. Like,
yeah,
does he want to be here long term? Who really knows? Terrence probably knows, but sometimes I'm like, does he really know? Is he just kind of going back and forth?
Yeah.
But I just don't see any possibility that he's as bad as he was last year. Like the 29% from three, like career low, like, just, I don't see that happening again, especially if Gary misses a couple of weeks to start the season. If the idea was to start Gary and then you already had like a really good idea of what you want in the second unit with Cole and Jalen playing together, I could see them going, you know what, let's just start Terrence. You know, if it's only going to be like a week or two, like Steve Clifford used to talk about this all the time. When like one guy is out, he would just throw like somebody random into the starting lineup that like didn't play a ton because he didn't want to disrupt not only the starting lineup, but also the bench unit. So I could see maybe some of that where they're just going to throw Terrence into the starting lineup. And then when Gary comes back, they're just going to plug Gary back into the starting lineup. And then Terrence will go into like whatever role. I don't really know. But
okay,
I just think Terrence is going to be a lot better than he was last year. He can't be worse.
So Terrence, this is a quick trivia for you. Terrence has been on the team.
Brother.
Terrence has been on the team since the 2016-17 season, halfway through, right? Comes from Toronto to Orlando, obviously. Plays 24 games that year. He starts 24 games. 2017-18, he plays 24 games again and starts 20 games. Then 2018-19, this is where we're picking up from here, okay? And since 2018-19 season, how many games has Terrence Ross, do you think, that he has started since 2018-19?
I'm going to put the over-under at 15, and I'm going to go under. Go under 10.
I don't want an over-number. Give me a number, you think.
Nine. I'll say nine.
Two.
Oh, my God. Goodness gracious. I mean, he's just like the epitome of a six man. Like, he's,
yeah,
and he does, like, when he is engaged in that role, unless he's just like completely fallen off, which I don't think so, because like a lot of his game relies on his athleticism and he still has almost all of that. But yeah, two, I was not expecting that, but like, he is the epitome of like a really good six man.
Yeah, well, we saw it in 2018. he shot 7 threes a game and shot 38% from three. Not only is this a career low shooting from three at 29% last year, but since 2018, when he really caught his groove with the Magic and had his first true real full season with the Magic, four attempts a game is his lowest amount. He shot 7 attempts in 2018-19, 7.3 the next year, 5.7 in the year after that, and then 4.2 last season. So I think last season could be the kind of anomaly. Like, we really just have no idea what was going on with T-Ross. Like we said, we speculate he was kind of checked out. But I will say he was, you know, obviously with the Advent Health Training Center, he was filming all within there, I believe on his Instagram, posting to his stories the other day. And then I watched a YouTube video from him, from his Terrence Ross YouTube channel today, actually, where he went to Magic Gaming and sat down and played some games with the Magic Gaming guys. That is not to say that he's like just rooted in Orlando, but I do think that's a good sign that he is putting himself out there. Like, he is doing stuff like working, you know, going to meet the Magic Gaming players, which I'm sure was a cool thing for them, and getting to play, you know, a game, a few games of 2K with them, as well as the Advent Health training, you know, facility. I just think that they're, and with the team, we've heard him talk about it. Like, he's just in a completely different mental state, I think. And I really think that means good things. And regardless of how long Gary is out, I think that if Terrence is the Terrence of three seasons ago, then that's the Terrence that I'd want to be getting minutes. And if T-Ross is that T-Ross, like if T-Ross is able to give you 38% from three, like 2018 T-Ross, are you starting him over Gary Harris? Or not starting him, are you playing him over Gary Harris? Or do you think that there's, are you still leaning Gary on that?
I'm still leaning Gary.
All aboard the Gary train. But
yeah, I mean, just like the added, to me, like, Gary is more of a calming presence on the floor. Yeah. Like, Terrence can single-handedly win you a game on any given night.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, that's a big factor. But especially, like, Terrence is a fine defender, but has never, like, really, like, wowed me on that end. That's actually not true. Last year, I don't know if it was, like, scheme or something that he decided to do, but he started playing the passing lanes a lot more. Yeah. And, like, you have the numbers in front of you. I would put a lot of money on the fact that last year, Terrence's steals went up. No?
No.
Are you serious?
That's surprising. It was tied for his lowest steals in his career.
Then it must be the previous year that I'm thinking about. The 2020-2021 season?
Last season, he was 0.4 steals. The season before, he was a steal a game. The season before that,
There it is. Is that his career high by chance? I doubt it. Anyways.
His career high is 1.1, and he's done it since 2015.
Then my assessment of Gary is correct. He's the better defender. So, yeah, let's go with Gary Harris. So,
okay. Yeah. For what it's worth, you sounded very confident about T-Ross.
And I felt confidence because I was like, damn, like, T-Ross getting in these passing lanes. We're getting out on the break. But maybe my eyes deceived me.
Yeah. So I'm leaning Gary as well.
But what I will say is, if Terrence shooting 38% from three,
yeah,
I'm probably playing him over RJ.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, T-Ross jumps up for sure on that. He might be playing anyway.
that's true.
But I also don't know. Because if it's last year's Terrence, he's definitely not. He shouldn't. But I just think that he's going to be a different person than the player than he was last year. So we have two left to talk to, if my list is correct here. We have Devin Kennedy and Caleb Houston. We've talked a lot about Caleb Houston, right? I mean, we're impressed with he's a big player, but he's also, you know, just great off ball. Reminds you, talked about, like, there's some similarities. We talked about him on the forwards episode. We threw him in here because we were like, he might play two sometimes if we're in a pinch and he needs to do that. If he can shoot the three, like we hope he can, and get to that point, I could see him running the two as well if you're playing like a bigger lineup. But yeah, so Caleb Houston, is there really anything to add besides like his off ball and like potential shooting the three ball?
Well, I feel like the conversation with Caleb is so right now intertwined with Devin, because like you alluded to it, there's 16 guys right now that we think are like capable of making like the actual active roster. I feel like the other 14 that we've talked about up to this point, unless Terrence Ross is traded, are virtual locks to make the main roster.
Yeah.
I feel like we kind of have to have the same conversation like Caleb and Devin. No, like, do we want to talk about Devin and then we'll kind of talk about both of them, because we've already kind of talked about Caleb?
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. Like, yeah, we can do that if you want to talk about Devin. As far as Devin Kennedy goes, let's just see. Last year, 10 points a game. Granted, guys, five games, but 10 points a game, two assists, one steal. Let's see, 1.2 rebounds, shot 7.5 threes a game at 40.5%, and 9 field goals at 34%. So Devin Kennedy is the epitome of just put him in there to hit the three ball. That's what you're getting with Devin. And that's about it. He's 6'2" and he can shoot. And that's all I got.
Well, the hard part of this conversation is that we don't expect really either of these guys to be like heavily in the rotation.
Yeah.
I guess Caleb would surprise me a little bit less than Devin, just because it feels like, because of Devin's size and like he's such a 3-point specialist, I just don't see him being in the rotation like right away. Like barring injury. Like Caleb gives you a little bit more just because of the size and like the defense. So I could see him like maybe getting into the rotation because of those things. But it, to me, like when I just look at the contracts, right? So Devin, basically it's a 3-year, $3,754,000 deal. The second year is fully non-guaranteed, and the first year that we're like going into right now is non-guaranteed. It becomes fully guaranteed on January 10th. Then when we look at Caleb signed a 4-year, $8.2 million deal. The first 2 years are fully guaranteed, and then the third and the fourth obviously are not fully guaranteed. But they've invested more money into Caleb Houston. They never used their second round picks, and this year we see them take him, you know, with the 32nd pick in the draft. And I just feel like he is more of like the archetype of what John and Jeff look for. You know, good size at 6'8". He's a solid defender, can shoot the ball a little bit, and he's kind of younger, you know, kind of fits the timeline a little bit better for the Magic. So I'm not saying because Devin isn't a good player, like the Magic desperately needs shooting, and Devin definitely, you know, supplies you with that. But just kind of all of those factors makes me feel like Caleb is the guy. Now, I don't know what that means for Caleb, because we have Admiral Schofield and we have Kevon Harris as the two ways. Currently, you can't convert a contract just from like a standard contract to a two way. You would have to waive them. They would have to clear waivers, and then you can sign them to a two way. So I just really don't know what it means. If I had to guess, and we're having this conversation around one guy probably has to get either traded or waived, and unless Terrence is moved relatively quickly, and that might happen. That might be the plan, and to keep Caleb and Devin. But if you don't trade somebody, I feel like Devin would be the odd man out, unfortunately.
Is it kind of wild like that we're to the point where, if you would have told us this was the case like a few years ago, we'd be like, you're out of your mind, that Terrence Ross being on the team, like it's really coming down to Devin Kennedy or Terrence Ross is what it feels like. Because like you said, Caleb Houston's had more invested in him. It's T. Ross or Devin Kennedy. And in terms of, you know, but more complexity, way more complexity when you get into Terrence Ross, just because are you going to just get him for like trade him for essentially a bag of chips at this point, like a second round pick that you're probably not going to use
at the deadline?
Right, that you could get at the deadline and just benefit from Terrence Ross if he is having a better season this year. I just think that it's going to tell us all we need to know. I mean, if it comes down to it, do you depend on Terrence Ross to provide you minutes or Devin Kennedy? Like, that's what it comes down to. Who do you trust more? And Terrence Ross is Terrence Ross. So
yeah,
I'm going to bank on the fact that he's going to be able to impact the game. And he's going to be coming off screens, hitting the three ball. I get it as far as Devin Kennedy, but Terrence Ross is bigger. He's going to defend better. And it's just a no brainer for me. So I just don't know, man. Like, it's going to be very interesting to see what ends up happening. You could tell me either of the two happen, that Kennedy's, you know, waived or T Ross is traded. And I'll be like, yeah, makes sense. Like, I'm just not going to be surprised either.
I would be really surprised if, like, Caleb Houston got waived.
There's no shot.
We haven't really had, like, this part of the conversation, but you're right. It feels like it's Terrence Ross being traded or Devin Kennedy is waived.
Yeah, it has to be because it's just simply from numbers. Like I said, Devin Kennedy could have an argument for getting playtime on this team because of the need that it needs for shooting. But if Terrence Ross is going to shoot, like he can, and like we know him to be able to do, then it doesn't seem like that, like, we shouldn't think that deeply about this.
That, and even though, like, you could argue that Devin Kennedy is a better shooter than Terrence, but, like, Devin, for the most part, I mean, he can come off of screens, but I think for the most part, he would be featured as, like, a spot-up shooter. We know Terrence is, like, you can run multiple plays for Terrence. You can run, like, that little, you know, fake side dribble handoff where he cuts back door and has a dunk at the rim. You can obviously, like, run different screens for him. He can come off of pin downs, but it just has, like, just in general, more like offensive gravity because he is so dynamic and teams know, like, if Terrence Ross is on the floor, like, you need to smother him or you need to keep the ball out of his hands. And then, like, in the last couple of years, he's added, like, the ability to kind of, like, you know, a couple of dribbles into the lane, pull up, or like a floater, like, kind of get to the rim a little bit. So yeah, I don't mean to, like, just totally, like, discredit Devin Kennedy, but, like, I would certainly, you know, go with Terrence Ross in that scenario.
And it's also the fact, like, why we really can't see Caleb Houston being gone in this situation is because, like we said, they invested him as a second round pick. They've given him, you know, his 4 years with, you know, essentially the first 2 years guaranteed, correct?
Yeah.
And he's, like we said, just huge, 6'8", 19 years old. A lot of people don't realize that Devin Kennedy is 25. So I think that because he's young in his NBA career, people don't realize that. They might think he's 22, 23, but he's 25. You kind of know what you've got in Devin Kennedy. Caleb Houston, you really don't know. You're still judging him based off potential. And at this point, Devin Kennedy, you're just kind of like, I know who he is. But so I think that really is kind of the deciding factors for me in terms of that discussion. So ultimately, yeah, I fully expect it to come down between Terrence and Devin, and we'll see what happens. I like I said, I don't know that I would be shocked either way if T-Ross does get traded, just based on what we've heard and rumors about Terrence Ross over the last couple seasons and Terrence Ross's attitude last season. It felt like he went from saying, I don't think I'm going to be on the Magic long term, to I'm really excited about the future of this team.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Something happened there. I think a conversation happened.
Like, Paolo Banchero happened, baby.
Yeah, right. But I'm saying, like, there was
definitely a conversation.
There's a temperature, like, hey, check.
If you want to get out of here, we need you to not trash the team and say you want to be traded. Thank you very much.
Well, regardless, like, it might have been just like, hey, we're excited for you in this team. If you are, like, if you are in, you're in. Tell us. Let us know. And Tiras was like, okay. And then, like, the Paolo training facility, young team, fully healthy. Like, Terrence Ross, we saw him. It almost looked like he went to full realization on, I think it was his podcast or like streaming, where he was like listing out all the good things about this team. And he was like, man, we have a chance. Like, we can do it. And you could see, like, he was pulling up, like, his computer tabs.
He said playoffs. He said we have a chance at the playoffs. He said we could effing make the playoffs.
Yeah. And he was, like, pulling up the standings, and, like, he was genuinely getting excited about it. So
yeah,
it just didn't seem like a demeanor of a guy that knew that he was going to be leaving. So I think he did a complete 180. I just feel like the writing's got to be on the wall that he's staying again. So we'll see.
At least I'm happy until the deadline.
Right. I'm happy to have him back if he's going to improve that efficiency from last year. It can't get worse.
And a guy that's been in the league for 10 years, like, knows what it makes, knows what it takes to make the playoffs. So, you know, you don't want to say like, oh, Terrence Ross said we're making the playoffs, we're making the playoffs. And, oh, Markelle Fultz said or tweeted fourth seed, so we're going to be the fourth seed. But it's really encouraging to, like, see the confidence, you know, around
somebody who's been
guys.
There thinks that this team can actually do something, which is nice.
Right. Luke, I think that does it for the guards, right?
That about wraps it up.
We got anything else?
I do not think so.
I don't think so. Before we go, just want to remind you guys of the preseason night that we're having coming up on October the 14th at 7 o'clock. That's going to be the Magic's preseason finale against the Cleveland Cavaliers. The preseason finale is usually like the regular season dress rehearsal. So if you think preseason and you're thinking of like the NFL and like an NFL preseason finale where most of the guys that are going to be playing in the actual games doesn't play, the NBA is totally different from that. So if you have that in your mind, forget about that. This is going to be a fun night. If you want to join us, you can purchase tickets at FEVO, which is FEVO.me/the-sixth-man-show. Again, I believe the last time I checked, we still had tickets left in section 108, 109, 110, and 111. It's just kind of like the first section on the other end of the tunnel near the Magic Bench and just kind of throughout the lower bowl there. So if you want to come join the game and hang out with us that night, it's going to be a lot of fun. So again, FEVO.me/the-sixth-man-show. We really hope to see you guys there. But other than that, that is going to do it for us. For Luke Sylvia, this has been Jonathan Osborne. You guys have been listening to The Sixth Man Show, and we will catch you guys next time. See ya.
Thanks for listening to The Sixth Man Show. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and Spotify to get new episodes downloaded directly to your phone. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to give us a 5-star rating and a review. It helps out the show a lot. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Sixth Man Show. We'll catch you guys next time. Go Magic!